This is an RNIB Connect radio podcast.
Hello, I'm Toby Davey, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio. In Tracks of My Life, we invite a guest to select a few tracks that mean something to them and mark important moments in their life, from maybe that first track they ever heard, right through to one track that they would like to pass on that might give people hope for the future. My guest today is blind actor, theatre maker and access consultant Benjamin Wilson, who was the Ramps on the Moon agent for change at Sheffield Theatres. He is also the co-founder of creative audio description company Hear the Picture and the theatre company Brickwall Ensemble. Ben has worked with many theatre companies and performed on many stages over the years, including Leeds Playhouse, The Globe and the National Theatre, to name just a few. Hello, Ben, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honour to be here. Really excited to be here.
Your first track, Ben, is Heart of Glass by Blondie, which is dedicated to your dad, who sadly passed away when you were only 10 years old, which must have been really tough and hard at that early age. And I wondered if there are any fond memories of family life before your dad passed away that you are happy to share with me?
Oh, loads. Yeah, absolutely. I always think my shelter was completely idyllic for those first 10 years. Lots of wonderful, happy memories. Great family holidays, whether it's camping in Wales or it's even flying out and having one wonderful family holiday in the Caribbean, which is amazing. So lots of really happy memories of both me, my brother and my dad were all sport mad. So lots of hours spent in our garden kicking a football around or throwing a cricket ball around and all that sort of stuff. So many happy memories. And this song in particular, as someone, I know there'll be lots of people listening who lost parents, or particularly those who've lost parents when you were young and when you were kids, and anything that gives you a bit of a connection to that parent can be a really beautiful thing. And I remember learning years later after my dad died that the two posters that my dad had on his wall when he was a teenage boy were Debbie Harry and Kate Bush. And they were also two of his favourite musical artists, as well as fancying them both. And so I've always had a bit of a connection. It's always brought a smile to my face whenever I've heard Blondie or I've heard Kate Bush. So I thought I should definitely choose one of those. And Heart of Glass is just one of my favourite Blondie tracks. There's lots of brilliant Blondie tracks, obviously. But Heart of Glass will be one of my personal favourites.
Was your eyesight sort of bad at that time, or was it okay at that sort of early age?
Yeah, interesting. So I lost my sight properly in my sort of late teens, early 20s. But it was my dad who first took me to my eye hospital appointments. And we had many, many hours sat in the waiting room at Manchester Royal Eye Hospital, winding away the hours, playing silly games. We'll all know how many hours you have to spend waiting in waiting rooms for hospital appointments. And when I was young, I was first diagnosed with my uveitis and glaucoma. It was my dad that took me to my first appointments. And yeah, I've got weirdly happy memories. And I do connect him to my sight loss and to my eye conditions because of those early trips to the hospital with him and whiling away many, many hours playing all kinds of silly games to keep ourselves entertained in those waiting rooms.
And you say that when you hear Heart of Glass, it makes you sort of, I suppose, have a connection again with your dad. And for myself, as someone who's lost, you know, sort of people in my life and family members, I can really sort of understand what you mean, because there's certain tracks that I hear that remind me of certain people. And I wondered if it's the track that makes that connection, or the memories that you hear that come back for you when you hear that track.
I think it's a bit of both. I think, for me, like I said, it's those imagining my dad as a teenage boy listening to these tracks and having his turntable up with these, yeah, those sort of tracks on. And yeah, I really, and you know, I'm a music lover myself, particularly that sort of rock music is my type of thing. So it's really beautiful that a song that really gets me on a musical level, and I love on a musical level, I like to imagine my dad having that sort of similar reaction and bring it there, bring back all those memories and have that really beautiful connection to someone who's no longer here.
Blondie there and Heart of Glass and a track in memory of your dad, Ben. We now come to a time when you spent 7 years in Sheffield. And I wondered, what were you doing in Sheffield for those 7 years?
Absolutely. So I spent 7 years living in Sheffield. I moved there for a job. I moved there to work at Sheffield Theatres, the Crucible Theatre in Sheffield. Sheffield Theatres is the organisation that runs both the Crucible and the Lyceum. Lots of people know the Crucible for the snooker every year, but actually, to me, it's also one of the best theatres in the country. And I spent 5.5 very, very happy years working at Sheffield Theatres as agent for change, a very silly job title, but it basically meant I was in charge of leading on change and progress when it comes to disability representation and disability access in those theatres.
I suppose, you know, so Sheffield Theatres were very good at access, and that Access for Change and Ramps on the Mood and all those programmes are so good in actually sort of making theatres think about access.
Oh, completely. Yeah, absolutely. And Ramps on the Moon in particular was a big moment for Sheffield Theatres as an organisation. And I was employed there as part of Ramps on the Moon, and just to be embedded in the organisation on a day-to-day basis and run projects and work with everyone right across the organisation, from the big bosses to the bar staff and everyone in between. And it was also just amazing to work at an organisation who just produces great work. And in the 5 years that I worked there, there were 3 shows that transferred to the West End in those 5 years. And that's an amazing record for a regional theatre to have that kind of success. And so it felt like a really special place to be, and also at that time to lead on and be involved in, yeah, really improving the state of access at that theatre, to the point where I think maybe they'd admit themselves, the team there, that when we arrived, they were in some areas lacking behind. And then by the time I left, I think they could really make a claim to be some of the industry leaders when it comes to access and representation on stage as well. So I was, I moved to Sheffield for that job, and not only did I fall in love with that theatre, but also fell in love with the city of Sheffield as well. I think Sheffield really is a brilliant city. Too hilly, if you ask me, and walking home from work after a long day up those steep hills was difficult, but the history of Sheffield in terms of the steel industry and the music scene as well, I think in particular, is what's special about Sheffield. For, you know, it really punches above its weight, I think, in particular when it comes to music. And you think about the great bands and artists that have come from Sheffield, whether it's the bands that we're about to hear, but you know, as well as them, there's Pulp and there's Human League and Def Leppard and Richard Hawley and so many other brilliant, you know, musical artists, who, you know, Reverend and the Makers and so many others that have made a huge impact on the music scene nationwide, have all come from Sheffield. So that's one of the things I loved about living in Sheffield, was feeling a connection to that great musical history as well.
And of course, with it being Sheffield, it's got to be the Arctic Monkeys. And you say at the time you were the perfect age for the Arctic Monkeys. And I wonder what age that might be.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am in my, I'd still say early 30s. Yeah, early 30s. And so, yeah, I was a teenager when the first Arctic Monkeys album came out. And so it had a really profound effect on me. And then again, so the first album, particularly whatever people say, that's what I'm not. I loved the album. I think it's a great, you know, it best captures, I think, what it was like to be a teenager in the early 2000s. And what it felt to have those first early nights out as a teenager. I think the album really encapsulates that, and so always brings that joy out of me. And then actually the song we're gonna listen to is from it's from their 5th album. It's from AM, which then came out when I was in my early 20s, and was a very happy time in my life with a great bunch of friends and lots of happy memories of staying out far too late and dancing and singing along to this song, and the rest of the songs on this album as well. So yeah, I'm a huge Arctic Monkeys fan. One of my favourite, all-time favourite concert gig would be Leeds Festival in 2014, and Arctic Monkeys headlines the final night of that festival. And me and 2 of my best friends, actually there was a big group of us to start that gig, but it was so wild and everyone jumping about that me and 2 of my best mates, we knew that's how rowdy it was going to get. So we grabbed onto each other and in the mosh pit, sort of, it was just the 3 of us and spent the whole gig singing along every single word to every single song. So yeah, it's just this, yeah, Arctic Monkeys is a band, but you know, this era of Arctic Monkeys just made me think of great friends, of happy times as a student, a time of life that was so exciting and so full of great friends and joy and excitement about, you know, lots of fun was had, let's just say, in that era of my life. And the Arctic Monkeys will always remind me of that era.
So the ultimate question will be, which Arctic Monkeys track have you chosen? Did they play it live at Leeds? And what is the track?
If I remember correctly, the one I chose was Do I Want to Know. There are hundreds of Arctic Monkey songs I could have chosen, but I've gone for Do I Want to Know because that is the song that really reminds me of that time in my early 20s and seeing them do it live at Leeds in 2014. Do I want to know if this feeling flows both ways? Started hoping that you'd stay.
Do I Want to Know There by your favourite band Ben and the Arctic Monkeys, and playing live at Leeds Festival 2. We are staying with Leeds for your next track, Ben, and one which is a sort of religion that is following your football club through thick and thin, and, you know, through all those ups and downs of following your football club. And I've got to be honest here, I don't have a football team that I follow. I've never been to a football match, although when I was living in North London, I lived very close to Arsenal's football ground. Ben, why do you think football is a sort of religion, and why Leeds United?
Yeah, really good question, because I don't have a, people might be able to hear that, I don't have a Leeds accent. I'm not really from Leeds, but because as a kid, we moved around quite a lot as a family, particularly because of my dad's job. So we moved around a lot, and so we didn't really have a local team. But my Uncle John, who's a very important part of my life, he was a Leeds United fan, and he succeeded in convincing me to follow in his footsteps and become a Leeds fan. And yeah, it's just always been a huge part of my life. People who are football fans will know that Leeds United have had some ups and downs over the past 30 years. When I was quite young, Leeds had a great team that got to the semi-final of the Champions League and were flying high and being amazing. I was tricked into thinking life was going to be easy and great as a Leeds fan, and it was always going to be that wonderful. Unfortunately, it's not been that wonderful since, and there's been relegations and then coming back up and then getting relegated again, and lots of ups and downs along the way, more downs than ups in my time following Leeds, I think. But it's hard to explain why football is such a religion. There's so many reasons why, but I think it's also related to my love of theatre and why I work in theatre, because I love going to the theatre, but I also love going to football games and going to sport because I love being part of a live event. I love being part of a crowd, all sharing this same communal experience. And there is something particularly special about being in a football stadium full of 40,000 people, all singing passionately with their heart, belting out these songs at the top of their voice, and you feeling part of that crowd and feeling part of something bigger than just yourself. And also part of something that is this connection to history. Leeds United have been going for over 100 years. And so to feel like I'm witnessing and being part of that 100-year history and something bigger than myself feels really, really special. And there's also something amazing about football being a distraction in some ways, but also a vehicle to, you know, when I always say that the best times in my life and at the worst times in my life, on a Saturday for 2 hours, none of those things matter. And I can just swear and shout and sing at the top of my voice. And people often say, oh, it's just a game. Why do you take it so seriously? But for me, that's why it's so special, is it is just a game. That for 90 minutes every Saturday, I can pretend that this game is the most important thing in the world. And I can shout and I can swear and I can kick things in frustration about something that doesn't really matter. In a safe space to be able to do that, to vent your emotions and vent your feelings and have that amazing outlet. And I love the culture of it. I love the kits. I love the songs. I love the sounds. I love the smells. I just love everything about a game, a day at the football. And I've got so many happy memories of going to Elland Road to watch Leeds play and singing Marching On Together, this song, at the top of my voice.
And I suppose, how accessible has it been going to watch Leeds United play over the years? Because I think, a bit like theatre, going to see your football team has become a lot more accessible.
Definitely. And there's now great, you know, great options to have the audio description or the radio commentary in your ear whilst you're live at the game, which makes it just far more accessible, which is great. I now, interestingly, when I'm not at the game, I now listen to football on the radio rather than watching it on the TV, which has been a big shift in my life. Same with cricket. And I love listening to cricket on the radio as well since losing my sight. And some of my friends get annoyed that I'm like, I'm watching on the telly. I'm like, no, I love listening to sport on the radio, and there's something about painting the pictures in your minds as you hear the radio commentary that I think is a really special feeling as well. And yeah, and really, I mean, I never really went to the football. So I'm not one of those football fans who obsesses over the tactics and the observing every little movement on the pitch. I wasn't one of those football fans. I was one of the football fans who went to the game to soak up the atmosphere, to hear the crowd and be part of the crowd and feel the emotions and the wild roar of the crowd. So all I really need is that voice in my ear commentating and filling me in on what's happening. And then I can just enjoy being part of that crowd and singing along and shouting along and all that sort of stuff.
And I suspect as we now play Marching Together that you will be singing along and shouting and raising your arms as well.
Absolutely, yeah. In an entirely embarrassing fashion.
Here we go with Leeds United.
Well, there they go, Leeds United, and they're still marching on too. We're moving now from football to theatre, and as we say, there are connections between theatre and football, and we're going to be focusing on a play that you wrote and starred in, which was a sort of retelling of Shakespeare's Henry V, maybe all about football as well. Ben, take me back to that time when you were starting to work on this show called Henry V, and how it all came about and how you were able to get this show onto a theatre stage too.
Absolutely, yeah. It's going to make me sound very football obsessed, I realise now, putting these two songs back to back. I promise you there's other elements of my life. But yeah, there was it would have been quite a few years ago now, really. Time flies. About 8 years ago, maybe, me and a couple of friends who have all work in theatre, and we studied together, and when we were students we'd made shows together and we'd written shows together and created them together, and we'd then all gone off into the industry and done our different things and worked in different parts of the theatre industry. And the thing about being an artist and working in theatre is, you know, I've had the pleasure of working at some great organisations and working on some brilliant shows and on some beautiful big stages, but actually you're always compromising, and particularly in my access work, I'm, you know, working with other people and compromising all the time to try and make things happen. And really, we got together in a pub and we're like, right, we love the work that we do. We're having the opportunity to work on some great shows and some great places, but we never get to do the stuff that we really want to do, that really feels like ours and that we have real true ownership of. And we just cooked up this idea in a pub over a pint for a piece of theatre that was a retelling of Shakespeare's Henry V, but making it about football fans. And it used original Shakespearean text, and Shakespeare is a huge love of mine. I'm a big Shakespeare nerd, and it's one of my true loves. And it used some of Shakespeare's original language and some new writing and lots of football chants, lots of music and all that sort of stuff, just to create this really fun, wild night at the theatre. And we just loved it. And we, you know, like I said, I've had the privilege in my career to work at the National Theatre and at Sheffield Crucible and Leeds Playhouse and these huge, the RSC and all these huge beautiful theatres which have national importance. And whereas this show, we just got some money, we got Arts Council funding and funding from a few different places to tour it around pubs and the back room of pubs, and it just meant we had the freedom to do whatever the hell we wanted and to have these just really wild nights doing this really fun, silly, joyous piece of theatre. And I'll try and bleep this this quote out, but one of the quotes that will always stick with me was someone in a Crown Green Bowls club in Huddersfield, which isn't the normal place you do Shakespeare, but that's where we took this show, to one of the venues we took it to. And a guy in that place afterwards, a lot of the regulars in that place, we convinced them to come and watch the show, but they stood by the door so they could leave if it was rubbish, which I have so much respect for. I wish I could do that every time I go to the theatre. And afterwards, one of them said to me, they stayed for the whole thing thankfully and loved it. And one of them said to me afterwards, I'm going to do the clean version of this quote.
Thank you.
He said, I normally hate that Shakespeare stuff, but that were class, is what he said to me. But he said that in a more sweary way. There was many more swear words in that quote. And it was a really beautiful experience making that show, because like I said, it wasn't the biggest show I've worked on. It wasn't the most significant or weightiest or biggest, but it was me and my mates making a show that was ours and was truly ours, and we had complete ownership of, and we were so proud of, and we loved. And it's, yeah, some of the happiest memories I have on stage. And this song is Earth, Wind and Fire's September, a classic. Lots of people love this song. And there was that's a song. We use lots of pop songs to which the tunes have been used, the football chants in the show, and this is one of those. And so we had a sequence in the show where we did some awful dad dancing to this song whilst singing the football chants that are to the tune of this song. And so every time I hear this song now, if it comes on the radio or when I'm out and about, I have to stop myself from going into the dad dancing, because it's ingrained in me that when I hear the opening beat of this song, I have to do the moves.
Earth, Wind and Fire there, and September, and a track that featured in your show, which I suppose brings Shakespeare and football together with Henry V. We now have a track that is for your partner, Laura. Ben, how did you and Laura first meet?
Me and Laura actually met appropriately working on a show together a few years ago. We were both in a production of Much Ado About Nothing, the Shakespeare play, another Shakespeare. I told you it was one of my one of my favourites. And yeah, and we were in that show together and we toured around the country together. And we thought we were being very subtle and clever and hiding our budding romance from the rest of the cast, but they all knew. And we were very disappointed that when we told them that they were like, yeah, of course we knew. We all worked that out ages ago. But yes, me and Laura now have been together a few years and happily live together, and she's absolutely fantastic. This song, actually, it's a beautiful song she introduced me to. It's called Tears of Joy by Slow Club. And people might know Slow Club better because Slow Club, one of them, after they broke up as a band, one of them is now known as Self Esteem, and she's, again, from Sheffield. And this song, Laura is cited, and so I've sort of introduced her to a lot of visually impaired culture and the visually impaired community in lots of ways. And one of the things she was really interested in when we first got together was when she's texting, she sends a lot of emojis. And so she was really interested to learn how the voiceover on my phone describes various emojis. And we'd play this silly game where we'd both listen to the voiceover description of the emojis and try and replicate the emojis and see how close we got to the actual emoji based on the phone's description of them. And one of the emojis that Laura uses the most is the one that is described on my phone as face with tears of joy. And so face with tears of joy became like a little running joke between the two of us. Whenever something funny happened or something happy happened, we'd say face with tears of joy. And then we discovered this song called Tears of Joy, which is a beautiful, gorgeous song. And it felt really appropriate. This became sort of one of our songs.
And I think it's always good to have someone in your life who you can share your life with and talk things through, because I think you need that, sort of in your life. But it can be quite hard as a visually impaired person finding that person, can't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's so much to say about the struggles of dating life and meeting someone and all that sort of stuff as a visually impaired person. It's something I found really difficult, actually, because I lost my sight in my early 20s, which is, you know, it's a time when you're trying to do lots of that and trying to meet people and go out on dates and get out there in the world and meet people and all that sort of stuff. And it's something I struggled with, the sort of mental hurdle of getting over how to handle all that stuff and how to navigate the world of dating as a blind person. It's something I wrestled with for a long time and found quite challenging for a long time. I'm very relieved now never to have to go on a awful dating app again or have that awkward conversation on a first date where they ask you the weird, uncomfortable questions about your eyesight. Yeah, so I'm very happy to have met a wonderful person now. She saved me from that dark, horrible world.
And you need it.
Slow Club there, and a track for both you and Laura, Ben. We are now moving back to Leeds for your next track, Ben, and one that featured in a show that you worked on as the audio description consultant through the other strand of your work. You've got your theatre work, but this is the audio description work. Ben, what was it like working on this show and this relationship with the company and the show?
Absolutely, yeah. So, I still think of myself primarily as an actor and a director in the world of theatre, but a huge amount of my time these days is spent as an audio description consultant, so working with other theatre makers and other theatre companies and theatres to make their show accessible in interesting, creative ways for visually impaired audiences. And I've been doing this for a number of years now, but one of the shows that felt very significant in my development of that sort of work was there's a play called Road by Jim Cartwright, which is a great play, and it was on at Leeds Playhouse Theatre in 2018, directed by a director called Amy Leach, who's someone I've since worked with a lot, who has been a bit of a mentor and a friend to me over the years as well, and a great person. And I'd been doing audio description consultancy on small shows, on little shows, and on my own work for a long time, but Road really was the first time that I stepped up and did it on a really big production, on a quite a big main stage production, on a big mainstream theatre. And so it felt like a really significant step forward for me on that front. But I think it's also fair to say it felt like a bit of a step forward for the industry in some ways, because Amy has gone on to be a great champion of disabled artists and of access for disabled audiences. And that was the first time that Amy had done any of that kind of work. And it all happened because me and Amy had bumped into each other at a theatre event, and she'd audio described The Buffet to me. And that's how we met. And then we worked together, I think we've worked together 7 or 8 times now since then in various ways. And Road was the first time that we did work together. And it was, I think both me and Amy and the rest of the team who worked on that show have talked about how it it really had a profound effect on us doing the audio description on that show in that way. And off the back of that, some of the cast of that show became great friends of mine, and we set up a company called Hear the Picture, who do creative audio description in character as actors performing audio description in really wonderful creative ways. And that, again, all came out of this production of Road. So yeah, that's it's a real, for me, I see that production and that show as a real landmark in my career. It was a real moment for me where things stepped up a notch and it opened lots of doors for me that have led on to a lot of the work that I'm doing now. It felt like a really important and significant moment in my career, that show. So we'll always have a special place in my heart. And that show ends with a really moving scene, which features this song, which is Try a Little Tenderness by Otis Redding. And it's a song I'd heard before, because obviously it's quite a famous song. It's one of those that I'd heard before, but I'd never really connected to it until working on that show. And this really beautiful scene and really moving moment in the show where this song is played. And I really fell in love with that song, and it really showed me how this is to me now one of the best songs ever written, in my opinion, because it's just such a powerful piece of music. And so this song will always have a special place in my heart because of that show, but also I'm very grateful to that show for introducing me to this song and to the work of Otis Redding, who is now one of my favourite artists.
And I think the interesting thing, I mean, I found audio description back in the early 2000s, and it was through a colleague who said, oh, you know, there's this audio description thing happening at the National Theatre, and I think other theatres do it. And they said, oh, it might be useful for you. You might get a bit more out of theatre. And it was that thing when I went to my first AD show for the next sort of, I don't know, 10 years or so when I was still living in London, I was going to a show sort of every other week and seeing all types of different types of theatre and stuff because it was made accessible to me. And I think AD has moved on in the last sort of 25 years and we've now got sort of lots of integrated audio description. How do you see AD sort of having developed over the time of you starting up your audio description consultancy company?
Yeah, I think that work, the more interesting, in my opinion, creative and integrative stuff has been happening for a long time. And companies like Extant and other artists have been doing it for a long, long time, making work accessible to visually impaired audiences in interesting and creative ways. I think what we've seen maybe in the last 10 years is mainstream theatres also embracing that. And mainstream theatres, you know, it took a while even to get the most basic traditional audio description into mainstream theatres. And thankfully, that battle has been won in lots of ways. And like you said, if you're living in a big city with a great theatre, then you can go to see an audio described performance every week if you wanted to. In London, you could probably go every night of the week if you wanted to. And that's really exciting. And that feels like a huge leap forward from, like you said, from 25 years ago. But we're also now seeing mainstream theatres embracing more creative stuff, more integrated stuff, more ambitious stuff with audio description, and that really, really excites me. You know, in my audio description consultancy work, I've, you know, gotten to work at the Royal Shakespeare Company and the National Theatre and Sheffield Theatres and Leeds Playhouse, and you know, some of the biggest and most respected artists in the country in sort of mainstream theatre, and that is really, really exciting because I think 10 years ago that wasn't happening. I don't think those theatres and those artists were bothering and getting excited creatively by audio description. And that's starting to change. And I think, I hope that continues to change. And I feel like there's some real momentum building in the industry and a real desire and a real passion for making this stuff happen now. And that's just, it's spreading. And that's really, really exciting. And I think it started with smaller organizations and, you know, independent artists are great at getting this stuff off the ground, and smaller organizations are great at doing it, and they sometimes give the kick up the backside to the bigger organizations to crack on as well. And that's what excites me.
Well, we're going to hear A Little Tenderness from that Road production that you first worked on as audio description consultant.
Oh, she may be weary. Them young girls, they do get weary wearing that same old shaggy.
A classic bit of Otis Redding there. Sadly, Ben, we now come to your final track, the one that you might like to pass on to others that may give them hope. So, Ben, what is the track and why have you chosen it?
Yeah, this was the hardest one to choose, actually, because I've got quite a few of these songs. Actually, I've got a whole playlist of songs on my phone, of songs that cheer me up or give me hope for the future. Actually, interestingly, it started actually in the time in my life when I was losing my eyesight. I have a really profound memory of putting together a little playlist of songs to cheer myself up and to sing along to and dance around to in my room when I was having a really difficult time of dealing with my sight loss, and when I was first making that transition from being a sighted person to a blind person. So since that time, I've always sort of built up a playlist kept a playlist on my phone of songs that cheer me up. So it was really hard to choose one, but I've gone for this one because it's one that people might not know quite as much, and it's by an artist called Riley Ritchie, who I also really like Riley Ritchie because he's like me. He's someone who wears lots of different hats, much more successfully than me. But I like he's an actor and a musician, so he managed to wear both those hats at the same time. People might know him as an actor from Game of Thrones. He played Grey Worm in Game of Thrones, but he's also got a brilliant career as a songwriter and as a rapper and as a musician. And he's fantastic. I love his work. And he released this song a few years ago, which is called I'm Not Okay, But I Know I'm Gonna Be. And I find it really heartwarming. And it's one I often listen to when I'm having a down day, when I'm feeling sad or feeling ground down by the world. This is one of those songs that I will put on because I love that it's really honest and says that life is difficult sometimes and life is hard, but we all know that better times are just around the corner. I'm a bit of a believer in that sort of philosophical idea that this too shall pass, of that sort of stoic idea that you've got to enjoy the good times because they're not going to last forever, and you can't let the bad times ground you down too much because there'll be good times again around the corner. And I think this song is a really beautiful sort of summary that fits into that sort of philosophy, and I think it's really, really healthy. And sometimes it's the best thing you can say when you're feeling down is, and someone asks you how you're doing and you're having a difficult time, you can say, I'm not okay, but I'm going to be. And I think that's a really empowering idea to really accept and embrace and not hide the fact that you're upset or having a difficult day, but that you know that if you get through this difficult day, a better day is just around the corner.
What a lovely message to end on. And thank you so much indeed, Ben Wilson, for sharing your Tracks of My Life with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. But I did find it very difficult to narrow it down because there's so many songs I wanted to pick.
I'm not okay, I know I'm gonna be. I may have lost my way again, but I'll get there in the end. Been through the lowest low, some highest highs, sweet hello.